I'm going to let the songs that we just offered to the Lord be our prayer to him. It's just, isn't it wonderful to sing together? So, as I start The Uncluttered Life, Part 2, where are we? Some of you may mentally be ready to go home and start throwing things out. Others of you might be saying, this is just not my issue. To those of you, I would say, praise God, be thankful. And I would also say, don't tune me out yet, because I think that your role is going to be in helping others who this is a problem for. So how do we get a more simple, uncluttered life? One thing we do is we disentangle. I love that word, disentangle. And what I mean by it is that we're going to put a little emotional distance between an object and ourselves. We also need, if we're going to start decluttering, we also need to do it to the honor of God and not to control our own lives. Seek help from others. If you're on the internet, go to any blog and say the minimalist life, the uncluttered life, the simple life, and wow, there's all kinds of stuff. Use discernment. A lot of it is from a non-Christian viewpoint. You can learn from them, but you can see that there's kind of a Zen Buddhism philosophy behind a lot of it. So just take it with a grain of salt. But most important, don't put off beginning. A little start is something. So we define clutter, anything that doesn't have a purpose or bring us joy. What does it mean to declutter? Declutter means physically removing the object from your house or your car, if that's what you're working on. You have to get rid of it. Now, decluttering is not the same as organizing. Right now, there's all kinds of things you can buy, more file cabinets and better closet organizations and things like that. Those have their value. But if you're just going to try to organize your clutter, you still have your clutter. And so declutter first, then organize. If you're not using the material, there's no sense keeping it and putting it in a new file folder. Now, I'm using the phrase get rid of it, give it away, and I use those phrases in a generic term. It just means get it out of your house. I'm all in favor of recycling, not just throwing things away into the compost pile or whatever, of donating when you can, selling things when you can, whatever your means of doing it, I will leave that to your imagination. If you can find a new life for an object, find someone that really can use it, there's a lot of joy in passing it off that way. So I leave the means to your imagination. The important thing is to distance it from your house. Now, maybe you're thinking that acquiring possessions takes money, and since you don't have a lot of money, this is not your issue. Well, I'm sorry to tell you, some of us are suckers for anything that is free. And some of us have been recipients of other people's material goods through inheritance or the inability to say no when people offer us things. Stuff comes into our homes in many different ways. We buy it, we inherit it, we find it, or we are given it as gifts. But no matter how we acquire it, once it is ours, we have trouble parting with it. Our generation is dealing with this in a different way than they have in the past. And it's mainly the sheer volume of things that we have. We have larger houses and more storage options. We have more choices of things to purchase, and we have more money to purchase them with. And then we hang on to the things that are given to us or the things that are free. Why do we have so much stuff? I recently had someone tell me, I think junk just breeds by itself. It just seems to multiply. The truth is, we allow it to multiply. We help it to multiply. And once it does, we feel a sense of responsibility towards it. When we lived in Maine, one morning we went out and we found a little hamster shivering under our pickup truck in the driveway. Well, now, obviously, we couldn't leave it there. So we brought it inside, and after failing to find its rightful owner, it became a part of our household, just like it should have. But material objects are not living creatures, but many people treat them in the same way. Once something is theirs, they feel that the care and fate of that object is in their hands, just as much as that little hamster was in my hands. So, distancing, disentangle, remember that. What are some of the reasons we decide to keep an item? Here are just a few. We might need it. Why do we keep an item? Some people are creative and want to repurpose it in some novel way. Others feel that there is always a use for something. Remember that suitcase we were looking for in this scavenger hunt with the broken zipper? Well, couldn't you use that as a moving box if you just tied it up with rope? Why do we keep an item? Maybe the item was a gift or an inheritance and we feel guilty getting rid of it. What would other people think if we did get rid of it? Many times we have memories associated with an object, and souvenirs fall into this category. You keep something because you paid good money for it. You keep something because it is still perfectly good. You keep it because you hope or you want someday to do it, like a hobby that you think that you're going to learn someday. Or the worst one of all, I'm saving everything so my children can decide what they want to keep. Please don't go there. If these are the wrong reasons to keep an object, what are the right reasons? I'm using it. I love it. It gives me joy. So if you're looking at a picture on the wall, you're not using it, but you look at it and it gives you joy to look at it. That's not clutter, okay? Get the distinction there. Okay, let's break down some of the wrong reasons we keep possessions. For those of you that have memories of the Depression or even hearing stories of the Great Depression, there's always the fear that you may desperately need a particular item in the future, and even worse, that it might not be available anywhere else. That's possible. Some people want to be prepared for any possible scenario, so they buy in bulk. That can be a great money-saving idea if you already have the space, you have it organized so that you know what you have and you're able to find it before it goes bad. If you have to hunt for an item, if it spoils before you remember to use it, if you buy the item again, forgetting that you already had it, then for you, it's probably a good idea to just only buy in 3-month quantities. The optimist among us may believe that any item can be repurposed. That may be true, but is it likely in your lifetime? Inanimate objects have a natural life cycle. They don't have to be kept forever. One of the books gave this example of birthday candles. You buy a box of birthday candles and you put them on a cake. They are lit. Happy birthday is sung, photos are taken, and the candles blown out. They are a waxy mess. Someone carefully picks the candles out of the frosting, licks the frosting off, the cake gets eaten. The candles have made their contribution. Their natural life is over. But wait! Is that you replacing the remains in the box and slipping the box into the kitchen drawer? Are they going to rest there in their little cardboard coffin, getting in the way of other things you're trying to locate? Will you take them out periodically but decide they look too shabby for someone else's cake? Well, if they're too worn down for party duty, maybe you can take the bits of saved candles and melt them together, molding and rewicking them to make one large candle. What are the odds of that happening in this lifetime? Instead, when the party is over, ask yourself, what is the natural life cycle? Is it over? Remind yourself that the candles have served their purpose. The rubber band did a great job of holding the stalks of asparagus, and the cork... I think I'm heading home. And the cork helped preserve the wine bottle. But the asparagus has been eaten, the wine has been finished, and the bottle is headed for the glass recycling bin. It's time to say goodbye to the helpers. I have to admit, I have asparagus rubber bands, but it's only what can fit in one little plastic baggie. After that, they're out. This story might help for old birthday candles or the rubber band around the asparagus. But what about the gift that we have been given that we just don't want and we don't need and we won't use? Even if it is homemade, don't keep it if you're not going to use it. You might want to take a picture of it with the maker, give them a copy of the picture, and then find a new home for the item. A few questions that are helpful to use over and over again. Am I using it? Do I love it? If it were lost in a fire or flood, would I replace it? If the answers are no, then simplify your life and get rid of it. How about souvenirs? I have my fair share. With all of our travels, I really do. But the ones that I keep fall into the category of things that I love and give me joy. Some things were picked up without much thought. When in doubt, take a picture of the souvenir and use that to recall the wonderful memories behind the object. I think what you'll find is that you can recall those memories even without the picture or the memento. I have said many times, if you love it, keep it. But that is different from feeling, I should love it, and I feel guilty that I don't. After we returned from 3 years in Uganda, I went shopping with my sister in Northern California. She bought me a long skirt and top, and it was so practical for Uganda, where we needed to wear long, modest skirts, but not for the next country we were going to, where the women wore pants. It was very nice. It fit. I thought I would love it. I wore it once, and it was not really me. I didn't need it. I didn't need it in Uruguay. I didn't need it in Wisconsin. But I always thought that I should love it. Why? It was expensive. It was a gift from my sister. It was nicer than my normal clothes, and it fit. But I never wore it. In preparing these talks, I thought about it in my closet. I even went so far as to put it in a bag to go to Goodwill, and then I took it out again. I thought, maybe if I go on a cruise someday. Oh. I thought it would be the perfect thing to wear on a cruise. Okay, now it was time for a reality check. I've never been on a cruise. My husband is not remotely interested in going on a cruise. So I put the outfit on. I stood in front of a mirror. I didn't really like it. If it was destroyed in a flood or a fire, would I replace it? Certainly not. So I took it to Goodwill before I changed my mind. Am I glad I did? Yes. Do I miss it? No. Do I still have the memory of shopping with my sister and her gift to me? Yes. I am trying to gain the ability to separate myself from things. A skirt is just a skirt. No matter how much I spent on it or who gave it to me, there should be no guilt about letting things go. Relationships have more value than things. Things that were given as gifts and things that we have memory attached to them are difficult to get rid of. Now, remember, we're talking about gifts that we don't like, that we don't need, and that we don't use. One author suggested 5 why questions. Questions to ask when hesitating about getting rid of sentimental items. Let's take the example of a vase that was given by a grandmother to her granddaughter. Question, why should I keep this vase? Answer, Grandma gave it to me. Question, why did Grandma give it to me? Answer, for a wedding present. Question, why for a wedding present? Probably because she felt she needed to buy a wedding present and this would do. Question, why did she feel she needed to buy a gift? Answer, because people feel obliged to give wedding presents. Going through the why questions changes the value of the object. It is now just a vase, and you can go back to the helpful questions. Do I love it? Do I need it? Do I use it? If not, it's just a vase, and give it away to someone who loves it, needs it, and can use it. Many items we own were purchased because of who we think we should be or who we were at one time. Whenever we look at them, we feel guilty because we spent money on the item to begin with and we aren't using it. And it also reminds us that we have failed at being the person that we thought we should be. An example might be the bag of yarn sitting in your closet because you wanted to learn to knit. Some people have hobbies, but there's others of us that just wish we had that hobby. Maybe you just need to bring that bag of yarn out and try it again. Maybe this time it'll catch and you'll love it. But if it doesn't, give the yarn away to a knitter and someone who can use it and make good use out of it. Another example from my own experience. I read lots of very helpful material before going through chemotherapy for my breast cancer, and one article suggested that some quiet handwork might be just the thing for the times when your energy was low. I am not a crafty sort of person, but I have always wished that I were. So I bought a little simple quilting project with complete instructions. It never even got started. It used to be sitting on the floor near my reading chair, but then it got moved to under my bed. We can ignore unfinished projects to some extent, out of sight, out of mind. But then we rediscover them. And what is our first emotion? Guilt. I bought it and I didn't use it, and I'm not creative and crafty like I think I want to be or should be. So what did I do? I realized it was a mistake to buy it. I realized I would most likely never start it, and I gave it away so somebody else could discover their creative, crafty side to them. We get distracted by physical clutter. It clutters our mind, and it clutters our emotions. Most of us don't realize how many extra possessions we have. Remember, I'm not talking about the things we use or the things on the walls that you enjoy. I'm talking about the items that have not been used for years. Maybe you were the one who used to host the family Thanksgiving celebration. You have the dishes, the place settings, the decorations to prove it. Do you still do it? If not, could you pass it on to the person who is now doing it or to somebody else that could use it? I read that the average American child has 150 toys. A few months ago, we went through the Christmas season. How did you do? Did you end up buying things just because you had to give a gift? Did you receive things that you put up on a shelf only to forget about? How do we break this cycle of material junk? Some ideas. Communicate with your families and do it early. Don't wait until November to talk about Christmas. Start talking about it in January and say, this year, why don't we just give consumable items and then give them some suggestions. Some things like a family pass to the zoo for the season or to a museum. One thing I read was to give a child a gift certificate to a restaurant and let them choose who they want to take out for a meal. There's lots of ideas and suggestions if this is the direction you want to head in. I've started, we lost most of our things, but when my husband's mother died, she had saved everything. So we got it all back again. And one thing I've started doing is passing along the letters and drawings of, so for example, my son, his cards, letters, pictures of things when he was 5 years old, I gave them to his son when he turned 5 years old. And I don't know what they're going to do with them, but and it's just like to keep things moving through the generations and let them decide what they want to do. We're all getting older. My advice, don't wait until the last minute to start downsizing. Why? One thing, we don't know when we will die. Use your health and strength while you have it. Remember, you're not forgetting a person just because you give away the book that they gave you. You still have the memories of them. I know it's difficult to accept the fact that our children do not want everything we offer them. You have to respect that. They have a different lifestyle. Today, if a dish doesn't go in the microwave and the dishwasher, they don't want it. It's not personal. Try to disentangle from these objects. They are just material things. I read a quote that's a very sad commentary on our lifestyle today. Being part of family means that you hand down useless stuff that nobody wants to the next generation. Let's not buy into that. Your kids and other people want you more than anything that you could buy for them. It's important that when we give a gift, there are no strings attached. When we were preparing to go to Uganda and we were giving away a lot of furniture and knickknacks at that time, we were able to give away a lot to families in the church. And they used it as a prayer item. Every time that they would look at this chair or this, you know, crock or whatever it was, they would remember the Falks and they would remember to pray for us. That was wonderful. Whenever you can find a second home for an item, there's such joy in giving it. One of the items that we needed to dispose of was a maple rocking chair in which John's mom, my husband's mom, had spent many hours rocking him when he was a baby. I gave that rocking chair to a young woman in our church who was expecting her first child. I had great joy in giving it. Do I know where it is today? No. Did she keep it? Did she paint it? Did she goodwill it? I don't know, and I don't care. It's hers to deal with. If you're not willing to give up control of an item, don't give it. It's hard, I know, but that's really important. Whenever somebody receives something, realize that they have they can repurpose it, they can paint it, they can pass it along, they can cut it in half, they can do what they want. It's theirs. Let them do it. Living with less is a journey you have to decide for yourself. Is clutter holding you back? Ultimately, is it hindering you in running that race through this life? Excuse me. Do you feel your possessions are like a heavy weight around your neck? Matthew 16:26. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his life? Matthew 6:19-21. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. There are lots of self-help books on this, so go for it if that's what you want to do. And there are lots of methods of decluttering. Some of them you'll find quite funny. One man chose to pack up the whole house method. And what he did, he invited all his friends, they had a party, and they packed up everything like he was moving. Everything was in cardboard boxes. And then for a given point of time, maybe 6 months, he took things out of boxes that he needed to use. At the end of that time, anything that wasn't out of a box just automatically was let go. That's a little radical for me. Most of us find smaller steps easier. One book suggested that you start with a horizontal surface. So it might be a table by your front door. It might be a kitchen counter. It might be a nightstand. What it is, one horizontal surface, because they do tend to collect things. And they said to completely clear it off. Then, if possible, leave it clear. If not, if you really need that space, then put back on that horizontal surface exactly what you need there and nothing more. I tried that in several places and found it very helpful. One was the kitchen counter. I cleared off everything except a very special hot water kettle and our coffee pot, but I put away the cutting boards, the sugar, the flour, all those things in the cabinets. Now, of course, I had to get rid of some serving pieces that I never used in order to fit them into the cabinet, but all of a sudden, I had a working counter space. It was wonderful. So, are you looking for a place to begin? Start small and start with something doable. Don't start with the hard, sentimental stuff. Start with something doable. And then if you do enough of that, that will get your momentum for doing other things. And you've all heard the suggestion that when you start with the bags of trash and to give away, and then it's helpful to have one pile that you use as undecided for right now. The value of that is that it will keep you moving through a project. You won't have to stop and agonize and agonize and agonize. If you're agonizing, just put it in the undecided pile. And then after a while, that undecided pile, you can further sort through that. So those things are all helpful little things, but just choose a way that works for you. It's easy to get paralyzed by indecision. The thought comes into your mind, maybe I will need this. It's possible you might, but ask yourself, even if you gave it away and found out that you later needed it, would something else work? Or how expensive would it be to replace? There's one gentleman in our church back in Wisconsin, 86 years old, and every 3 years he goes through everything he owns and gets rid of everything that has not been used in that three-year cycle. And he's told me that over his 60 years or so that he's been doing this, only once has he gotten rid of something he later wished he would have kept, and that was a fishing net. Pretty good record for that many years. For those of you who have inherited a whole house to go through, you have a hard task ahead of you. One helpful thing I read was to realize that not everything is in the same category. With everyday items like pots and pans and linens, just find a new home for them. Photographs, family heirlooms, valuable collections, divide up among siblings, relatives, and friends. When you have offered and no one wants any more, you are free to dispose of things however you can. Don't try to do it too quickly. You need time to mourn and to emotionally separate the person from his or her things. Save the memories, but let the stuff go. And start with the easy, non-sentimental stuff. When you get to the hard sentimental things, you can ask yourself, can I save one and discard the rest? Can I find a new use for it? A teacup to hold paper clips? Can this item help someone else? Like I mentioned before, we got our bedroom set from someone who was breaking up their house after they had to put their mother in a nursing home. We're putting it to good use and are very thankful for it. What about old photos? It is surprising how many of them are of places without people, people no one knows, blurry pictures, heads cut off, and unflattering pictures, or 50 pictures of the same event. Throw out the easy ones first, then just stop, put the rest aside, and then another day, start again and go through it with a fresh perspective. This is a task, even in our age of digital pictures, you have to keep on top of. If you have 500 digital pictures, how are you going to find the ones that you want? Go through them. It's so nice to be able to delete, and then you're really left with something that you want. Yeah. Sometimes it's helpful to set boundaries or limits. You can only keep the number of magazines that will fit in a certain basket. If the basket's full, you have another magazine, something's got to go. When it gets full, you have to recycle the old one. What about old greeting cards? My husband, as a pastor, keeps a file folder of some of the special notes of encouragement he has received over the years. He can pull them out and read them on times when he's a little discouraged. But it's just a file folder. It's not a whole box. Again, set a limit for yourself. When I discovered how many half-used bottles of hand lotion I had, I had to impose a moratorium on buying. I made myself use up what I already had before I got any more. Now, paper items usually don't fall into the keep because it is beautiful category. It doesn't fall into the keep because I love it category. It's usually, it must pass the useful standard. Is there some reason that I am keeping this? We talked about tax things. That's valuable. You need to be on top of that. But there, it's just amazing how when you get a new auto insurance policy, do you just put it in the file with the other last 10 years worth of automobile insurance policies? Really? When you get a new appliance, do you find that old owner's manual and throw it out? You might think of that. If you're thinking, I'd rather be safe than sorry. After all, maybe the IRS will think about auditing people from 15 years ago taxes. They don't. Ask yourself, what is the worst thing that could happen if I need it and I don't have it? Pretend again like you've been through a flood or a fire. It's been destroyed. Now what do I do? Is there another way you could get that information, especially in the age of the internet? Would you really replace that 1998 phone book? Things accumulate because the one that is replaced is still perfectly good. I mentioned about the three potato peelers looking for the perfect one. Well, what happens to those other two? Well, they're still okay. They still work, so you don't get rid of them. You should get rid of them. Find a new life for them. Let somebody else have fun with your less than adequate potato peelers. There's actually a term for that. It's called lateral multiplication. Sorry. And it means that you're getting a new one without getting rid of the old one. And this happens all the time. You see something that is new and different, great, buy it. And then you just put it in the drawer next to the other one that is perfectly adequate until that moment in time. So physical things can be seductive and attractive. Sometimes store displays are just too enticing. My personal advice, stay out of stores. It just breeds dissatisfaction. One of the keys to having fewer possessions is to stop the stuff from coming in. One of my well-used quotes is that there are seasons of life. And I use this to mean that life circumstances that you face today or this year might be very different in the future. This can give us hope when we're going through a trying situation that tomorrow might be better. But it can also be an excuse of why to put off simplifying your life today. Are you going to wait till the kids are older? until you have finished remodeling your house, until you move, until you retire. Some of these are valid considerations, but in the meantime, our temporary situation is creating permanent habits. We don't just become unattached to material things at a given point in the future. Well, we do when we die, because we don't take things with us. But if we're holding on to things now, it's not going to be easier to let them go in our next stage of life. If we excuse our excess now, it's not going to be easier to deal with in the future. The material things we need will change from one stage of life to another, but our attitude towards excess should be the same. More isn't better. Between activities, possessions, and commitments, we're being suffocated by the very things that we hoped would enrich us. Some people are thinking that until everything changes, nothing will change. That's not true. Take baby steps. It builds momentum. If a task is overwhelming, break it down into very simple steps. And don't look for perfection. Just keep making progress. As you declutter an area, build routines into your life. Things like always putting something back in the same place. That only works if there's a place to put that thing and something else is not already in that place. Are you still afraid to simplify your life? Think about a vacation trip that you went on and you were away from home. Your familiar stuff was not around you, but you didn't miss it because you were so involved in having new experiences, you were forward-looking. It's a conscious decision. Now really is the time to consider some questions. Are you going to find contentment in just what you need? What are you going to do differently with your possessions than you have in the past? Why do you give so much importance to material possessions? What is truly important in life? Another hint, don't focus on what you're discarding, but focus on the things that you are choosing to keep. That helps the process stay more positive. Remember, the best things in life are not things. The secret to being content is to want what you already have. Romans 12:2 reminds us, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Are you willing to critically examine the materialism and consumerism that characterize our world? And what is the end result of decluttering? You've had the joy of giving. You've passed it on to others who can make use of it, and you have seen how God continues to provide for you. You have more space to use. When you are able to easily reach things in your kitchen, it might make baking and cooking more fun, and you might do it. It's not so much downsizing as smart sizing. It is less about stuff and more about people and intentions and goals. What is your goal? What do you want in regard to your material possessions? When I asked myself that question, this is how I answered it. I wanted an apartment that feels peaceful and welcoming and is refreshing to anyone who visits. I want a closet where I like and wear everything in there. I want a kitchen where things are conveniently organized and where I have enough, but not too much, of equipment and supplies, where it is all easy to clean and keep up. Overall, I want a place where I don't have to panic at the thought of someone coming over. This is my individual dream. For me, simplification invites clarity. I love having clean, well-organized, useful spaces, but I have not arrived. I am still decluttering. My story is that it was the Lord's doing, and it resulted in blessings for me. In Maine, we had the often repeated the phrase, use it up, wear it out, make it do, or go without. We're on a journey. Are you ready to go to heaven? We can't take anything there. Do we really want to leave it behind as a burden for others? I'll close with a quote from Stephen Charnock. What a foolish thing it is to set our hearts upon that which will perish and vanish like smoke. Perishing things can give no support for the soul. We must run to God and rest in Him. Let's pray. Father, again, we acknowledge that you have blessed us with so many things, and we just praise that we would be wise stewards of how you want to use those. Give us hearts that are open to the needs of others, be willing to be spent and to spend in serving others, and help us to be people that honor you with our lives, with our possessions, with our time, with our talents, with all that we have. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.